Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now with more of The Jeff Blair Show, here's guest host Gord Stellick. Toronto Sports Radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair. He, of course, will be on Baseball Central 12 noon this afternoon here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is a magical weekend of baseball. I say that just the Jays heading into September. I know the month's not quite over, but it is guaranteed they will head into September for the first time in 22 years in a legitimate playoff race. A playoff race that they're not trying to battle right now from behind to be one of the two wild card positions. A team that obviously has their sights set on winning the division and starting a three-game series sold out all weekend at Rogers Center against the Detroit Tigers. So we'll talk some baseball coming up again. Jim Price will join us from the Detroit Tigers broadcast crew. Little Buffalo Bills talk as they get to preseason action. And now apparently, what, EJ Manuel is back in the mix as a possible starting quarterback. Just when it seemed like he had been sent to quarterback purgatory, or Rex Ryan quarterback purgatory. And Mark Osborne will join a little bit later on, talk some hockey. Mike Wilner, talk some baseball. But training camps coming up soon, with or without Blue Jay playoff fever. And, of course, Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy on Yahoo Sports and co-host American Wyshynski Show that you can catch here on The Fan and other places along the way, joining us to talk about some hockey. How you doing, Greg?
Stellectricity, sir. How are you,
That's
man?
That's it. Puck Daddy, Stellectricity. I liked it. We had, you know, we had a moment in the sun, so to speak. A couple of trade deadline shows.
It was really good times. And yes, I miss our opportunities to spice up what is otherwise one of the most excruciating days of the NHL calendar, the trade deadline day.
Well, who knows? Who knows what lies ahead? We shall see what gives there. But, you know, looking first, I'll start with the whole Mike Richards story. And it's, let's face it, on a human side, a sad story in so many ways. But on a business side, you know, you always hear of guys and teams looking to void contracts and what they can do and that kind of stuff. And generally, they can't. I mean, the contracts, there's so many rights weighted in favor of that collectively bargained on behalf of the players. But the problem here is because of what's gone on before, because of lawsuits, you know, by the Bougard family, what have you, that it's something, the language is far different than before that was collectively bargained with the NHLPA because of these things. And, you know, Mike Richards stands a chance of hopefully getting some help for whatever issues he's struggling with, but also being out $22 million.
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, when you talk about getting help, one of the things that really hasn't been established yet is what the Kings did behind the scenes to try to get him that help. And that's going to be a really interesting thing about this case is what strike was this for Mike Richards? You know, that's going to be something that we don't know quite yet and something that the Kings haven't been very candid about yet. But as far as the attempt to void the contract through this, you know, quote-unquote morality clause, I mean, it's fairly transparent. I mean, what the Kings are attempting to do here is use this mechanism to get out from having to buy out a contract that Dean Lombardi should have bought out a year ago, made a titanic mistake in judgment using his heart instead of his head and keeping Richards around, and then watching his play continue to decline. To me, it's always been two separate issues. Like, if you could argue the legalities of whether or not that clause applies to the situation, and that's obviously what the NHLPA is grieving because they don't want this to become a precedent. And then you get into an issue of hypocrisy, which is one that, I mean, how many other guys would have this clause enacted if this was going to be the route teams took? And then obviously the other thing is, you know, the Slava Voynov situation makes the Kings look terrible here, evoking this morality clause for this incident and not necessarily seeming like they're going to do the same for a guy who just spent 90 days in jail.
Hey, always, you know, talk about the double standard, Greg. I go back to when teams are winning and a player gets injured, then all of a sudden you want to fly him by air ambulance and do whatever, put him in hyperbaric chambers, you name it. And then when you're losing, you almost get the same reaction. Like, the guy's hurt. Basically, put him down like you would a dog. I mean, it's always been that kind of double standard. What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a little bit callous here in the sense that if the Kings or any team that's presented with a loophole that wants to take advantage of it, I mean, more power to them. And that might just be me as a Devils fan growing up watching Lou Lamoriello invent new and exciting ways to skirt the rules every year, no matter what the CBA said. But it does make me feel a little hanky, the idea that this precedent would be set for something that, according to media reports, was an amount of narcotics that were for personal use for Richards, not looking to distribute or anything else. And if this is the kind of thing that would trigger a morality clause contract termination, I mean, how many other guys are going to be in line for the same thing if that's the precedent set? So it's a kind of a muddled situation, but that's what makes the grievance so interesting in this case.
Yeah, and early on, Gary Bettman gave the Kings permission to basically implement it, so they got some salary cap relief on July 1st to go pursue things. I take it no surprise, because let's face it, Gary Bettman works for the 30 teams more than he does for the Players Association. But I am intrigued. I mean, Don Fehr and the Players Association, once they cut the deal, it's not like they're overwhelmed with business about things, and this could be one of those kind of barometer cases.
Yeah, and like you said, it's sort of the devil's bargain in collectively bargaining between players and owners and the NHL kind of putting a salary cap on its teams. The sense that, okay, we're going to tell you how much you're allowed to spend, but we're always going to kind of winkingly give you ways to get around contracts that you don't want. Used to be you could make them disappear in the American Hockey League. Can't do that anymore. Now you've got the compliance buyouts where you can take a problematic contract and then not have it apply to your cap. And obviously, in more of the nuclear option, you have this ability to terminate a contract if a player violates or seemingly violates his standard player contract. So it is sort of that winking acknowledgement by the league that there are always going to be situations that are going to hangdog you with a bad deal, and they're going to allow their teams to get out of them, even though it may not necessarily be in the spirit of the salary cap.
Buck Daddy Greg Wyshynski joining Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You bring up Lou Lamoriello, and I think of guys like Bob Goodenough when he was running the PA, and he would sometimes just say, tell the teams to stop complaining. Use the rules like Lou Lamoriello does in New Jersey. I mean, there's collective bargain rules. You control the guys at that time till they're 31. You may be paying them more than you want to, but he would use that as an example. And Lou Lamoriello, what did you think about all the history in New Jersey and then getting hired by the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mean, I like the fact that there's a guy in that seat now that wants to do it in Toronto, but the Lou Lamoriello Mark II in Toronto, what are your thoughts?
Well, as a Devils fan, I've been saying to people, like, as shocking as it was that Marty Brodeur retired as a St. Louis Blue, this was 10 times more shocking. I always figured Lou, if he wasn't going to be in the Devils front office, would be off running some college program in New England. I did not think I would ever see him running another National Hockey League team. And his addition to that brain trust up there is important. It could be tricky if they give him too much sway, because, to be honest with you, since the salary cap came into play, the Devils have been a team that struggled mightily in not only keeping teams together, but also in drafting, which has been sort of an issue for Lamoriello in the last couple of years. But as a member of a sort of a cabinet under Brendan Shanahan, I think he's a brilliant addition. You know, he's going to be a great influence on Kyle Dubas. One thing you can say about Lou is that he's been a great influence on a number of different general managers in this league that are thriving today. And in working in concert with Mike Babcock and working in concert with Mark Hunter, I mean, this is a very formidable think tank that they have there. And, you know, when Shanahan got hired, there was a lot of concern about this guy not having run a show like that before. And I told everybody, I said, the one virtue this guy has, the one thing we can mark down on his record and say that he was able to do in the NHL Department of Player Safety is surround himself with really brilliant people. And if you had told me when Shanahan took over the Leafs that it'd be Babcock, Lamoriello, Dubas, and Hunter as his hockey player personnel guys, I might have introduced you to a straitjacket because I would have never thought it happened, but here we are.
Well, and certainly as the Blue Jays have fever on the field, most fans satisfied with the Maple Leafs moves off the ice as well, like you say. And, you know, you bring up the name Marty Brodeur, and I'm curious how that played out because, you know, one thing Lou did in New Jersey was he had remarkable relationships with certain players. And I can remember when Damian Cox wrote the book about Marty Brodeur, that Lou Lamoriello flew up with Brodeur on a chartered plane, and they had the book opening, the launch at the Hockey Hall of Fame. I mean, such was his friendship with, at that time, an active player. How did that go south? Was it just Brodeur and the organization, or was it something that maybe hurt Lou, how it played out?
Well, I think it was a case where, you know, when Brodeur re-signed with the Devils, it was at a time when Parise was leaving, right? So he came back. He wasn't quite sure, I think, where the team was going to be headed after that run that they had in 2012. And he signs on for a multi-year deal. And then all of a sudden, during this contract, the Devils go out and they make the Corey Schneider trade. So I felt like at that point, Marty kind of felt a little bit betrayed. Like, here I am recommitting to this organization. I feel like I have viable years left. I come back at it at my usual discount, and then you go and do this, and the timing's not right for it. So he took offense to it. And then the other thing about Lou in that situation is one of his greatest strengths is also one of his greatest faults, which is that his loyalty is ironclad to people. I mean, one of the running jokes about Lamoriello in New Jersey was the amount of retreads that came back. I mean, even a guy like Scott Gomez, who left to play with the Rangers, was invited back last season, you know, for another run with New Jersey. So he was loyal to Marty to a fault, even when maybe the Devils were better off playing Corey Schneider more games. And it just became a very uncomfortable situation for all involved, and that obviously led to Marty leaving and retiring with the St. Louis Blues. But, you know, like you said, I mean, their relationship was strong. He said throughout it that he felt that Brodeur would come back at some point. And, you know, his relationship with the Devils is okay now. But obviously, he felt like maybe his opportunities in the front office were better served in St. Louis.
So it's funny, just that you think of that draft and they acquire Corey Schneider, and then a couple hours later, he lets Marty Brodeur make the selection of his son as a Devil draft pick, but it wasn't enough to stop the bleeding at that point.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, and it was never a Lou problem. I mean, Lou was always, you know, supportive of Brodeur and doing things to kind of keep him happy. I mean, remember this, Marty played in the Stadium Series game that year too, where maybe he shouldn't have, but he gets to start there out of deference to his time in Jersey. And, yeah, in both cases, I don't think either of their departures or either of their next chapters in their careers after the Devils affects their legacy. I mean, Lou, despite what's happened in the last couple of years and the Devils taking a severe step back because they just got too old and didn't have anything in the cupboard to replace those players, was still the architect of a 20-year run that's, you know, fairly unprecedented. And then in Brodeur's case, obviously, you know, he was the backbone and the foundation for that system they played. And retires not only as one of the greatest goalies in the history of the league, but obviously right up there with Stevens and Niedermeyer as the greatest Devil of all time.
Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy, joining Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And it's interesting about the big-name contracts, big money, and then last year the Toronto Maple Leafs deal two guys, Mike Santarelli and Cody Franson, to Nashville, and ostensibly because they didn't think they or couldn't at the time meet their demands for the upcoming season. Santarelli signs for less than expected. And Cody Franson, I'm stunned about, I call it the Dominic Moore syndrome, Greg, in that a few years ago he thought he was going to get the big contract from Toronto. It didn't happen, and he's been a guy that basically every year has had to find a job and perform quite well at that job. I just thought there would be more value and cachet to defensemen, and yet Cody Franson finds himself in a familiar place.
Exactly. And he sat on the sidelines and saw a lot of teams that might have otherwise inked him to a one-year deal, you know, go in different directions and maybe with cheaper options. And, you know, once Ehrhoff signs with the Kings, now all of a sudden you're just like, all right, I got to find something. So the talks are right now that maybe he gets a two-year deal out of the Sabres. That they give him some term, maybe they save a little bit on cash, considering that they're going to have some big money contracts coming down the pike in that second year. But I would love to hear what this kid has to say about the way he managed the market, because your inclination is that he overpriced himself. It's that he was asking for too much term or too much money, that maybe his time in Nashville scared off some teams because he didn't play very well there. We don't really know what it is until he's able to speak on it, but it's been an ordeal to watch the guy. He was 27 when free agency began, and now he's 28. Just to put that in perspective.
Well, he's always the guy, like with the Toronto, they'd always get around him. It'd be like, okay, Cody, come back in September, and you'll be the last piece in that puzzle, and we'll figure it out that way. And it's a little bit and a musical chairs that when you have a salary cap world, some guys get some good seats, but then at the end, there's people that would like you, but just not at the price. They can't afford that price anymore.
Right, exactly. And, you know, he's got the potential to be a 40-point defenseman. I think if he goes to a place like Buffalo, it's a good spot, because I think he's a guy who needs to play a little bit more than he played in Nashville. He only had about 15 minutes a night in Nashville, and I think he could be a guy who thrives playing upwards of 22 minutes. And the other aspect, too, is that the Buffalo Sabres power play, much like everything else about the Buffalo Sabres last year, was completely hot garbage, and having Franzen back at the point is going to be good. They'll give you around 16 or 17 points in the power play every year. That's what he's averaged in the last three. So that's a good fit for them as well. So it may work out that things will be okay for him up in Buffalo, and even if that's a team that's probably in a clear rebuild right now.
Now, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since. Are you among those that believe Phil Kessel will score 50 goals and 120 points in Pittsburgh?
No, I don't. I mean, I think he could score 40, mm-hmm. and I think that he's going to be dynamic there, especially on special teams. But the point that Dan Rosen from NHL.com made this week, I think, is a salient one, which is that, you know, he and Crosby have a similar game. And we've seen Sid not necessarily activate the offense of every winger he's played with. There may be an argument to be made that he fits better with Malkin than he does with Crosby. But Mike Johnson said this week that he's going to get his, you know, probably start the season with Sid and see where it goes from there. I mean, he's going to be fine there. And he really does give them another dynamic offensive weapon, and one that I think they've missed, for a bit with the other two on the wing. So it's going to be fun to watch. Plus, I don't know if he'll hit 50. I hope he hits 50, because I like, if there's nothing more in life that I like than to see Phil Kessel happy.
Would that make him happy?
Maybe 60 would.
Okay, for a second. Hey, Puck Daddy, thanks very much for joining Stellectricity, a little hockey talk. Always appreciate it.
Anytime, bud. Thanks.
Greg Wyshynski joining us. Of course, check on the Puck Daddy website. And, you know, he's got some, he brought up some really good points at the start. We talked about the Mike Richards situation and the morality clause that the LA Kings are enacting. And then why is it okay for Mike Richards, who right now is a bust contractually playing in the American Hockey League for far too much money, being a drag on the cap as well. But in the Slava Voynov case, the morality clause doesn't come into play because he's a frontline defenseman that they desperately need back on the LA King blue line, and the hypocrisy of it all. And of course, Puck Daddy's written about that. Mike Richards as well, that years ago when you had the draft day trades, Jeff Carter first was traded to Columbus and Richards to Philadelphia. I'm not saying Carter went first. I just meant he went first to Columbus before he went to the Los Angeles Kings. And it was interesting that was a sign that the best way or the surest way to guarantee you weren't going to serve out a long-term contract with the team that you felt you had a bond and agreement to was to sign that long-term contract. Meaning Richards had signed 12 years, $69 million. All he wanted to do was stay with the Philadelphia Flyers, but the no trade clause wouldn't kick in until a certain age. So just before, and I mean just before, the no trade clause kicked in is when the Flyers decided they would make those trades. And now you've seen it more times. Now you can't sign a 12-year contract anymore. The maximum is 8 years, but in a lot of ways that was where Mike Richards wanted to be. I know he's won Stanley Cups with the Los Angeles Kings, and we talked about it earlier that Dean Lombardi had a chance to enact a compliance buyout with Mike Richards a few years ago, so it could have bought him out, wouldn't count it against the cap, went with his heart and kept him, and now the organization appearing rather heartless in what they are trying to do in the Mike Richards situation. Little Buffalo Bills talk we are looking at. We'll try to get somebody on from Buffalo, but they've got, of course, their preseason game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and a lot of interest amongst Bills fans with Rex Ryan in town. And puzzling because E.J. Manuel was the previous head coach. Doug Marrone was a guy that coached him at Syracuse University, and Manuel looked like the guy for the future and wasn't happening and looked like he was the number three quarterback right now, but apparently he is going to see some serious time in that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's generally a game that your number one quarterback gets some serious minutes. So a little talk going on there about those Buffalo Bills. And tennis-wise, we'll be getting ready for the U.S. Open. So our guys like Brad Fay, Damian Cox and company will be talking and covering tennis. And interesting, Jenny Bouchard has now brought on Jimmy Connors, at least for now, to help her. I mean, that was painful to watch. What a great story it was last year, but that last one that lost 12 straight games in getting eliminated, and hopefully that will be a little bit of start of her getting back on track that way. Meanwhile, the Hamilton Tiger Cats lose for the first time in Tim Hortons Field, 26-23 to the Montreal Alouettes, and nice to see Angelo Mosca, who's seemingly been around forever, and I mean that as a tribute, and I was very surprised his number 68 had not been retired before, so they paid homage to Angelo Mosca, one of the true greats and true characters in the Canadian Football League in the game last night. Well, as I mentioned, kicking things off, we've got this great deja vu throwback summer that you wake up and you've got to all of a sudden turn the windshield wipers on because you got that little bit of dew and frost overnight. You got the Canadian National Exhibition getting underway, which signifies the beginning of the end of summer holidays. Gas under a dollar. I filled up 99 cents. So it seemed like throwback prices that way as well. And the Toronto Blue Jays, yes, back in the playoff race for the first time in 22 years. We'll talk to Jim Price coming up. He is part of the Detroit Tigers broadcast crew. Later on, Mike Wilner. Wilner's on all the time. I was chatting with him yesterday. Just enjoy it. I know every show, but everybody wants to talk about the Jays. He's had to be retrained in Jays talk about all the positive calls. I mean, he's had to be retrained. I think he's been reschooled rather well, so we'll chat with him. And Mark Osborne, my buddy from doing the Toronto Maple Leaf games. Well, he's still my buddy. He won't be doing the games, but we'll talk about the Leafs and we'll talk about his new job as a pro scout with another NHL team. That's all coming up. It's Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now with more of the Jeff Blair Show, here's guest host Gord Stellick. Toronto Sports Radio, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with no Jeff Blair. Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair this morning. He'll be here at 12 noon, Baseball Central. Love seeing the sign. We always have signs here around the Rogers campus about counting down, you know, it's the big TV deal, counting down the first day of what's going on in the NHL. Every now and then throw a curve, they have something like with the shopping network or something that I don't get, whatever. But now, show me. That's right, for show me. You know, whatever, I respect that, but it just doesn't have the same bite as the start of the NHL hockey season, and now it's counting down the number of days to postseason baseball. And postseason baseball, hopefully, well, we're expecting it now, but hopefully involving the Toronto Blue Jays for the first time in 22 years. Jim Price is going to join us in a few minutes' time. He's the color voice for the Detroit Tigers. They are in town for a three-game series, a sold-out Rogers Center over the weekend, but of course the good news is all the games on radio here on Sportsnet, Rogers Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and TV on Sportsnet as well. A 4-1 loss yesterday. And it's funny, I heard so much this morning with Dean Blundell and Matthew Barnaby that, you know, 21 out of 25 games, which actually means before yesterday, the Jays had won 21 out of 24 games. Like, what a tear they have been on. The best tear in Toronto Blue Jay history. So a rare loss yesterday. And little clip, little audio from the games. Of course, John Gibbons just talking about basically kind of game that was tough. The way the start took tough to get offense, the way the starting pitchers were going.
They both labored early, and you could see that pitch counts rising. So, you're thinking for both. You hope to get them through five. You figure what's going to happen. They both survived a little bit longer than that, and it was right there. We just couldn't mount any offense.
Well, it's a team that we're used to getting 10 runs a game. So what the heck's going on? It's not one or zero that you're used to for the Toronto Blue Jays. But that was it. Pretty strong pitching yesterday. And Marco Estrada, this is a guy. This is one of those nondescript deals when he came over from the Milwaukee Brewers. And he was a guy that had a penchant for giving up a lot of home runs, and it just seemed like he was yet another player they would throw out there. And then with the injuries that happened and other things, he's gone out, been a real reliable player and a reliable pitcher. And again, that was the case. Even though they lost yesterday, Estrada pitched well in a losing cause.
Luckily, I just gave up one run that inning and then kind of just figured it out after that, and things went well. Navi called a great game today, like he always does. The defense was great behind me. It was a tough loss today.
Well, all you can get, I don't know what counts as a quality pitching performance for him or not, but it was that way yesterday, throwing guys out, and that's been the way of the Toronto Blue Jay pitchers of late. We'll see if R.A. Dickey can do it tonight, and taking on, of course, a former Blue Jay in Matt Boyd. Matt Boyd went over in the David Price deal to the Detroit Tigers. He'll get the start for the Tigers tonight. But Jose Bautista, you talk about his bat, just seems like him and Encarnacion, you name it. They take turns hitting home runs, or both hitting home runs on a particular day as well. Yesterday, defense, and we had some callers earlier challenging the defensive capabilities of Jose Bautista. I mentioned lately, it seems like there's been a lot of those games starting at weird times. It's a weird time of the summer as well, that sun was a factor quite often in some good plays or some plays that guys weren't able to make in the outfield. This one's a little bit different. Jose Bautista being aggressive, and one of those errors, and if you're an outfielder, make an error, the ball goes a long way back, and that's what happened yesterday. Here he is talking about the game and the play.
Obviously, the road trip was a successful one. Wish we would have won today. It would have been a superb one if we would have been able to pull that one off. Gallardo did a good job early, and obviously I opened up the score for them with the error.
Yeah, it's on you, just being accountable. That's part of being a winning team. No excuses. And they head back home. Great road trip, 6-2. And as mentioned, the Toronto Blue Jays, 21 of their last 25 games have been victories. And not just here on the Jeff Blair Show, but of course, the Gord Stellick in today, by the way, but on throughout the day, on what generally has been a slow time of year in the sports world, with the NHL season about to start, the NBA season about to start, the NFL season about to start, not a ton of stuff been going on. So it's been a pleasure being able to ride the Toronto Blue Jay wave. Primetime Sports, a couple of guests talking about it last night. Cliff Floyd talking about the fact that, well, everybody on the team is worried about team first rather than individual stats.
There's one thing I've heard out of Chris Kilobo's mouth is, this dude knows it's about team effort every night. It's about team. And if he's telling the truth, which he seems sincere, then that team is destined to do some great things, because all he talks about is nobody cares about numbers. Nobody cares about the tally of who was 4-for-4 with 8 ribbies and who was 0-for-4 or whatever. Mm-hmm. We care about the win column.
Cliff Floyd on Primetime Sports last night with Jeff Blair and Elliot Friedman. And meanwhile, Mike Timlin. And keep talking about the Ward-Henke era, that this seems to be the most comparable in the kind of pitching that they're getting right now as from a closer. But Mike Timlin was one of those guys that had moments of pretty solid times as a Blue Jay closer in the past, and then went in the big trade for Jose Cruz all those years ago. But he's chatting on Primetime Sports last night about a championship team, and it's not about individuals.
It doesn't matter who is the hero or who's the GOAT, if the whole team is part of it, that's what makes championship teams.
Well, a little bit from Mike Timlin last night, and also last night, we're not going to play a clip from him, but just it was interesting. After we had Eric Francis on, I was on with Dean Blundell a few weeks ago, and Eric Francis from Calgary could not have given less of a ringing endorsement about Devin Setoguchi or not being a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs or somebody else, but he was on Primetime Sports last night as well talking about that. So the Leafs, he hopes to make the bounce back from a couple of indifferent years out there on the NHL front. So he was among the guests that was on Primetime Sports yesterday. Coming up next hour, Mike Wilner will kick things off. He has been a busy guy, like everybody is on the Toronto Blue Jay front, covering the team. And Mark Osborne will talk to my broadcast partner and talk about his new job with an NHL team and a little bit of hockey talk, a little bit of Toronto Maple Leaf talk. But it's Toronto Blue Jays. They take on the Detroit Tigers tonight. As you mentioned, all weekend, a sold-out Rogers Stadium for those games. And joining us, a radio analyst with the Detroit Tigers, Jim Price. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great. Always very nice here in Toronto, looking out over the water from my hotel room. Just beautiful.
Well, you know, I think back when Jack Morris was incredibly candid about when the Tigers and Jays were in a similar situation in the mid and late 80s. There was a real bite there. There was a real rivalry, a real little bit of a dislike there that in that rivalry. And the Tigers come to town. You wish you were looking over the great water there and in a playoff hunt like it was back then. What's, when you look back at it, got off the tracks in Detroit?
Oh, pitching. You know, starting pitching, the bullpen. It's just it's easy to dissect this situation. What happened to this team? The offense is good. The defense is good. And it's all about pitching. Starts with pitching, the middle is pitching, ends with pitching. It's that simple.
How do you, you look at the Jays, how they corrected it in some ways. You bring in some veterans, then you get some guys like Estrada, for example, that just work out that way. Is it the kind of thing you stick with it in many ways, or do you think it needs a massive retooling?
No, we have some key people. It's just somehow going to get enough pitching. Our position players are terrific. We have a great young catcher, of course, Miguel Cabrera, and the offense is fine. It's just Alavila, new general manager, is going to have to dig deep and come up with some starting pitching and also some fellas out of the bullpen. We need some power arms to come out of the bullpen like most teams have, and we have not had that.
What kind of pressure would Matt Boyd be facing against his old team tonight, or is he not? Are we overthinking that?
Well, you might be, but, the little bit I've got to know him, he's a terrific young man. But his composure on the mound, to me, stands out. And I don't think it will bother him at all. He's still learning. He's got a terrific arsenal. But I just think his makeup is that he can handle it. And, you watch him pitch, and it looks to me like he's been up here for some time, but it's not the case. So, again, it'll be inside of him, but also he'll want the Blue Jays to know that, he's a good young man. He can pitch. And he's got great respect for the organization. I've talked about it with him, and he's just a class act. So I just feel that, the way he'll handle it is the right way.
Jim, you go back to your catching days. How do you handle, say, a young pitcher in a tough, a pressure circumstance like tonight or a circumstance like tonight compared to a veteran?
Well, what you do is really just, hey, we want you to be yourself, Jeff Jones, our terrific pitching coach, will talk with them, and some other guys will probably talk with, maybe kid him a little bit. But I think it comes down to the catchers, either Alex Avila or James McCann, who will, spend some time with him. And they'll notice right away if there's any problems on the mound that might affect what he's doing. But I just don't think that's going to happen. I mean, he'd go out there and pitch. They might hit him. They may not hit him. But I don't think it'd be a case of any problems inside what he might be thinking about.
So watching, not so much from afar, but just from another pair of eyes and another sight, what have you made of the Toronto Blue Jay run, this turnaround? What's caught your attention, particularly for a team that seemed like they were having a regular-type Blue Jay year at the All-Star break?
Well, we always knew they had power, but the moves they made, of course, with David Price, was big. I mean, no question about it. I think Tulo was big also. I understand he's not hitting real well, but he's terrific defensively. And I just think Toronto organization showed the fans here they want to win. And I think that means a lot, not just the fans, but the players on the ball club, that, this is the year. We have the people we want. We went out and got other people, and we just feel we're going to show you what we can do. And I think the fans here have taken hold of that. I understand there aren't any seats left anymore at the ballpark for tonight's game.
It's like the old days here, which you've had before in Detroit, more recent years. So people start thinking ahead, and they're saying, okay, what would it take to keep David Price beyond this season? From what does it come down to, how much does it come down to do-re-mi and how much it to come down to other factors for, you know, a guy in his early 30s now making that kind of decision?
Well, first of all, he's a class act. You know, he's just a wonderful young man. And I still think, though, what we have to understand this day and age is about the money. And he's a great young man. And my feeling is, if anybody might say like Weaver did, you know, with the Angels, said, hey, I'll take this money. How much money do you need? You know, and he cut off his, I think it was Boris, his agent, and said, hey, I don't care. I'm ready to play and stay with this team. I think David's like that, but also he's going to get a pot of gold that I think will set a record, though. You know, let's face it. He's the number one guy available at the end of the year.
Well, Tigers have done a few pot of goals along the way, and how much do you factor guys being a position player versus a pitcher? I mean, the risk, I know Paul Beeston has had a policy, doesn't give more than five-year contracts, which for pitchers, which would be a deal-breaker, you think, for David Price. Is that practical nowadays?
Well, I mean, for us, I've always thought the key for us was to sign up Miguel Cabrera long-term. He's the best hitter in the game, and they go down as the greatest hitter of all time. So I think doing that makes sense. We also did it with Justin Verlander, who, he was great, you know, early years. He had some problems late with a sore arm and so forth. He had an injury last year. But I thought him also you have to lock up because through his 30s, I used to say when he was Justin, he had no secondary pitches. They were all number one. So I just thought that with a fastball from one, you know, from 90 to 96 with action and a secondary pitches, he would be a big asset for this ball club. And, well, we saw it, the other day, the way he pitched. And I think in the last inning that he went up to 97 with a fastball. And he doesn't throw it. He pitches it. So I think guys like that. And our owner, Mr. Illich, who is a great man, as you know, is a great hockey owner also, he thinks fans will come to see stars. Mm-hmm. And I think he's right about that, and also stars that are really good. But I think that way, to me, it makes sense.
Jim Price joining us, a former Tiger radio analyst for the Detroit Tigers with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Dombrowski situation catch you surprised, the timing of it?
Well, I think there was a lot of rumors, you know. The media really jumped all over it, and that supposedly he had not been talked to at midseason. And normally, I guess, I've never been in that spot, if you're going to get a new contract, normally start talking in the middle of the season. And the word was they had not talked to him. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I've known Dave for a long time. He's there 14 years, turned the whole organization around. But it was a surprise. It really was. And it says to yourself, it's a business. And I've known a lot of people my 24 years as a broadcaster with Tigers and also the other 5 years as a player. I've gotten to know people, and I have to remind myself it's a business. And you have to do the right thing. And the owner has that choice to make, that he made. And, we support him with what he does. So, Dave went to Boston. He'll have great years there. So, it's all part of the game, and it's a hard fact.
You know, you mentioned about the media, of course, 24/7 media now. Everything's a big story. But, you know, I always thought I worked on the hockey side that players don't worry about that stuff as much as people think they do. I mean, in the clubhouse, how did this resonate?
Well, we have a very quiet clubhouse, believe it or not. A lot of pros. I don't think I don't think there was any problem at all. I don't think it bothered them. I would say this: the infielders were talked to by Omar Vizquel, and settled them down. The outfielders with Dave Clark, pitchers with, of course, Jeff Jones and Wally Joyner, the hitters. I think they all, worked that in their particular coaching duties, and I didn't see it as a problem. And Brad Ausmus is a terrific young man. Never managed before. This is his second year managing, and he's learned a lot, and I think he'll just keep getting better and better. So I don't think the locker room was a problem at all.
Yeah, Jim, just again, taking a step ahead, assuming, hoping the Jays get to the playoffs like they appear on track right now. First time you get there with a lot of guys that maybe don't have playoff experience, and you've been there with the Tigers and that as a player, but then later on the broadcast side. What are the keys? What are the pros and cons about that? What can you use as a positive for the newness, and what do you have to really guard against?
Well, first of all, if your team right here, this great team in Toronto, gets to the playoffs, David Price has been through it. You know, he would be a major asset for that. And I just think this. I think that, you know, we have stars on our team. They work hard, and I just think they come to play every day, even though we went to the World Series twice. We took over in 1992. I came in with Mr. Illich. We went to the World Series twice. We played horrible. Of course, we're in the playoffs also a lot. And I think the Tiger team, the thing that hurt them the most was defense. Once we got out of the we got into the World Series, our defense was just horrible. So I think they'll be reminded that, you know, when you get in the playoffs, just look at it as a regular season game. You just do what you're supposed to do, play the game the right way. And I think really with the pros Toronto has, you know, with Bautista and everybody, I think they'll handle it. They'll be under control. You know, they're going to be a force, no question.
You know, it's interesting. They're saying now the Jays are 21-4 in their last 25 games. That's the best stretch they've ever had in their history. And how you have to have the chips fall in the way. I think of the 35-5 start by the Tigers. I mean, to me, in my lifetime, that still resonates as the gold standard.
Uh-huh. No question about it. And then in the second half, they played 500 ball. So, you know, that great start made that ball club. When we won in 1968, when I played, we lost the first game of the season, won 9 straight, and never trailed. We ran away with it. So I think the makeup of the team is so important, and I think the makeup with the Blue Jays is terrific with the addition of other players that have been brought in. Pitching, I'm not sure about, you know, the pitching.
Yeah.
You can never have enough pitching.
Well, I remember that one, and thank God Mickey Lolich won 3 games for you, and I don't think they'll be moving an outfielder like Mickey Stanley in to play shortstop. Those all things all came into place in 1968, and we'll see what happens.
You know your history.
I do. I remember all that very, very well. So it's a real pleasure chatting with you because, like I said, I running home from school to watch those afternoon World Series games for sure, and appreciate the series on the Tigers front, Jim.
Well, just let me say one thing. Bob Gibson struck me out also in the World Series. So anyway.
You weren't alone.
Thank you very much.
That's it for sure.
I love to come here. I've been one of my favorite cities. It's a class place. And, you know, and to play a team like Toronto, it's going to be a lot of fun. We could be a spoiler. Who knows?
Well, we'll see. It'll be sold out, which will be great. Thanks very much, Jim.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Jim Price. And, part of that Tiger team in 1968, with Denny McLain, Mickey Lolich, all those guys, Bill Freehan, Al Kaline, you name it, but he is here and loving being in Toronto. And, you know, that would be a fun environment when you're with whatever professional sports team and you're out of it. There are moments that resonate. Like I know when the Leafs were out of it, as unfortunately often were when you went to Montreal, just those twice a year back then, that was great. That always made it a special kind of game. And I know the Tigers probably will get a little more jacked than normal with a sellout crowd at Rogers Centre over the weekend as they take on the Toronto Blue Jays. And again, of course, all the action tonight, 7 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blue Jay Central will be on at 6:30 on Sportsnet. And then, of course, they will begin TV coverage of the game as well. We'll carry on baseball. Mike Wilner will join us to kick up the next hour, the busiest guy, second busiest guy after Jeff Blair here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Mark Osborne is a baseball fan in his own right, so we'll pick his brains a bit, but talk a little hockey to my broadcast partner on the Toronto Maple Leaf side. Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.